Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:55 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 11th. And the S&P today finished pretty much unchanged, but it was well off its low. There was some discussion around this New York Times article about the release of this information about Donald Trump Jr. meeting some Russian journalist who had been offering the prospect of damaging information about that would affect Hillary Clinton's campaign. I find it quite interesting that there is such an uproar in the media about all of this, but they seem to have entirely forgotten the links that the Clintons' trusts have had with various business interests. But the more important point from a market's perspective is that the index sold off very briefly, but then recouped the entire decline, and the Nasdaq finished up on the day. When we look at this trend for the S&P 500 over the last year, we're presented with this staircase step sequence uptrend, and these reactions, particularly since the presidential election, have been confined to about 50 points. And so far, this reaction has been pretty similar. It's been a reaction in the region of about 50 points. Maybe the one in March was slightly larger, about 75 points. But this is still a very inert range when an index is trading at 2,400 and a quarter. Then this is just a very consistent advance. So we ask ourselves simple questions like, is this a consistent trend? Yes, absolutely. What are the consistency characteristics? There's a step sequence uptrend, and there are reactions in the region of about 50 to 75 points. It's trading to the left of the 200-day moving average. And is there any evidence of type 1, type 2, or type 3 trend ending characteristics? And the answer is no. And as long as that remains the case, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And that is as true of the S&P as it is of the Nasdaq. The most that we could say about any of these indices is that they are somewhat overextended relative to their trend means. So for example, when we look at the weekly chart for the S&P 500, it has unwound part of the overbought condition, but not very much of it. And that would suggest that we could be in for some more ranging, that it could spend some additional time just simply going sideways in this inert fashion. And while expecting the market to remain inert beyond the short term doesn't make a great deal of sense, considering that volatility is so very low. But that is the market that we have been conditioned to expect. An uptick in volatility would represent a change to the status quo, and a reaction of more than 75 points would represent a change to the status quo. It would signal that we are in a more rapid phase of mean reversion. Then when we look at the way that European stock markets are performing, well then there is the additional aspect that Europe has had a somewhat larger pullback relative to what was a very impressive advance from the end of last year, when it cleared the 350 area, got all the way up to the 400 area. And that's the upper side, not just of the last 10 years, but it's been ranging below that level for an awfully long time. So some additional pause and consolidation around that 400 level is not at all surprising. But it is also that the euro is quite firm. When we look at it against the dollar, it is coming up towards the upper side of its range. It is within striking distance now of 115, and 115 represents the upper side of what is a 2.5 year consolidation. And if it is about to sustain a move on the upside, then it will at minimum have to clear the 115 area and hold it. It is somewhat overbought in the short term, but I think a clear downward dynamic would be required to suggest that there is resistance coming in around these levels. It is a rather pivotal period right now, because the Europeans don't particularly want to have the strongest currency in the world, but this is against a background where the economy is doing rather well, and the ECB is beginning to talk about tapering, and tapering should be positive for the currency because it removes supply. or at least it reduces the quantity of supply that is coming into the market. And the pound was a little weaker in here today, so that means now that the euro is breaking up and out of this range that has been there since, really, since November. It's clearing the 88p level and it's almost up towards this 90p level. When we look at that on the weekly basis, it represents a change. There was a clear downward bias to this chart, or there, so that the euro was trending lower against the pound until the election, and subsequent to the election, the euro has broken out. That also helps to, and I guess the currency is a one way of looking at the political fortunes, or the, or another way of interpreting it is that this is the outlook for the Brexit negotiations. The impetus is currently in with the Europeans, and if the UK were suddenly to get the upper hand, well, then that would probably result in the pound strengthening up. But at the moment, it does suggest that the euro is going to get firmer, and that we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside based on the clear upper dynamic that we saw today. And oil markets were quite volatile today as well. The oil price is up about three quarters of $1, but that's reversing an earlier decline. Earlier on in the day, we had news that Saudi Arabia is going to exceed its production, self-enforced production limits. But then we had news later on in the day that the US supply is expected to contract next year. There is a great deal of supply, particularly in the Bakken and in the Permian basins, that are economic in the mid-40s. So they're economic at today's levels, but that's not universally true of all of the USA's domestic onshore production. So I think that, and then there is also the question of when do these hedges run out? There's a lot of production was hedged up there around $55 in the first couple of months of this year, and perhaps that EIA forecast is taking into account when those hedges will begin to run out. So that is acting as a at least a short-term area of demand dominance for Brent. And if it holds through tomorrow, then we could say that oil has got a higher reaction low, and it has been a while since we've seen higher reaction lows on oil prices. And that is, considering now that the most recent lower rally high is in the region of $50, if this rally takes out the $50 area, then we could say that it has broken its progression of lower rally highs, and that would set it up for some additional upside and potentially going back up towards the highs that we saw at the end of last year, the beginning of this year. But that's only within the context of what has been a very volatile, ranging environment over much of the last couple of years. Natural gas prices were also in positive territory in here today. And the $2.80 level, and I guess between $2.60 and $2.80, has represented an area of support on a number of occasions. It's also right in the region of the 200-day moving average. This is also a volatile, rangy environment. But this was the first clear upper dynamic we've seen in quite some time. And US 10-year Treasuries got up and tested the 2.4% level today, but pulled back a little bit. And this represents the region of the progression of lower rally highs. I think the more important point is that the yield has been ranging between 1.5% and 3% since 2011. So we're almost in a 6-year range. This represents, and the fact that we can have very credible, rational conversations, that you have people on both sides of the divide arguing that the bond bull market is over, or on the other side arguing that there is years left and that we are still in a deflationary environment, and that both can make credible arguments. Well, that tells us that there's this war going on between supply and demand, that this is a very big range that in terms of the yield alone, you're talking about a 100% trough to peak advance. And that's a very large range at that. So we have ranging, we have time, and we have size. And that's characteristic of a type 3 bottom. So then that would suggest that while we are currently arguing about whether supply or demand is going to be dominant in the short term, the much bigger picture is that 3% represents the upper side of what is a developing base formation, and a sustained move above it would represent a quite profound change to the dynamics that have been overtaking the bond markets. Jamie Dimon talking today and saying that quantitative easing is a completely unknown territory that we can all guess, but none of us have any real idea about what it is all going to mean and what the unwinding of it is going to represent. That central banks are very tentatively beginning to raise interest rates and talking about reducing the size of their respective balance sheets. And I think, like Jamie Dimon said, is that they are reactive, and if it doesn't work, then they'll go back to the playbook of expanding their balance sheets again. That is exactly what happened with the ECB, and it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that that is what could happen with the Federal Reserve as well. So what happens over the next few months is indeed really quite a pivotal development. When we take a look at some of the other stock markets around the world, the Nikkei cleared the 20,000 level this week, and it is really quite firm. It is confined to what is still a really quite inert range for an index that can be quite volatile. But I think we really do need to keep an eye on the long game, because 20,000 has been an area of resistance on successive occasions since 1992, and if it can sustain a move above it, well then that would suggest that we are back in bull market territory, and not just beyond the short, not just short-term bull market territory either. The Taiwanese index is potentially leading higher. It has cleared the 10,000 level. It hasn't been able to trade above 10,000 since that blowout peak in the late 1980s. So we're talking about a very, very long process of consolidation, and this is really quite bullish territory. So considering the fact that both Taiwan and Japan rallied and had their explosive bull markets at the same time, the fact that Taiwan is now moving to a position of outperformance once more, that's also quite bullish for Japan. And Hong Kong had a pretty impressive day in here today as well. The Hang Seng was up over 1%, and it is firming now again and pushing back up towards this 26,000 level. When we look at that on the weekly chart, then we're presented with what has been a reasonably impressive uptrend since the beginning of 2016, and it has firmed again from the 25,000 point level. And in the absence of that break above it in the middle of 2015, it's had difficulty clearing the 25,000 level since 2008. So this is quite impressive performance. There are a significant number of other Asian markets that have been ranging for a fair amount of time already, and this is the Thai index, which peaked in 2013 and is still ranging below that 1600 level. And the Filipino market, which has been ranging below 8,000 since 2015, and is also trading in the region of its peak. So when we look at an increasing number of these markets, we are either presented with breakouts from relatively lengthy ranges, and India broke to new high ground yesterday, improved upon that performance today, and the Nifty is now closing in on this big psychological 10,000 level. And whether it pauses there, I think remains to be seen, but it is a bit overbought relative to the trend mean at the present time. But the bigger picture is that there are very few markets are breaking lower, and there are an increasing number are either trending higher, are in or breaking up out of these lengthy ranges. And when we ask ourselves these questions about is there top formation development characteristics, the answer is no. That doesn't mean that there aren't clear downtrends in a significant number of subsectors, that the retail sector is in rather dire straits, and that's as true of Europe and the UK as it is of the US, and for almost exactly the same reasons. But the bigger picture is that global growth is picking up. That is being reflected most particularly in the banking and in the materials sectors, because they're cyclical, and we are in a period of cyclical growth expansion, so cyclical shares should do better. And indeed, so is technology. Technology is also a cyclical sector. So that also tells us that we're not early, that both particularly the resources sector is a late in the cycle performer. The fact that that is occurring tells us that we are late in the cycle, but that does not tell us that the cycle is over. I think considering that technology was the leading sector on the way up out of the 2008 lows, that it would really require technology to roll over and in a meaningful fashion to really act as a lead indicator for more than a short-term peak, to really begin to even give us a clue that there is top formation development characteristics. There isn't. And that would suggest too that while we can certainly anticipate that one of the problems, and there is always a problem that creates a recession, could lie in the bond markets, there's an awful lot of debt needs to be refinanced in 2018 and 2019. It's less of a problem in 2017. The yield curve might be flattening, but it is not inverted. And that would suggest that this reaction that we have been presented with over the last 6 or 7 weeks is that it's just a reaction. It's not top formation development. There's no evidence of that. And I think that's perhaps the most important thing, the most important lesson that we can take from markets right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today. Wish all the best to all of you.